Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel. It is first thing on a Wednesday morning, October the 29th. It is TR in the AM, a little bit of new programming here on the Ryer on YouTube channel. If you haven't already, subscribe to Ryer on YouTube and hit that like button. Smash it. That would help us out a good bit as well. Also, turn on those notifications. That way you're alerted to all the content as it drops right here on Ryer on YouTube. Now, TR in the AM is going to be a bit of a mashup of a variety of things, consisting in large part of content that we produce here on Ryer on YouTube, whether it's college football talk, as you probably, if you're here already, and we appreciate you jumping on at this early hour to do this live with us. Going to be a good bit of college football, some college basketball. We're going to get into some NFL, I'm sure. We'll talk some golf from time to time. Big golf fan. Really, a lot of the different things that we do. Alabama football, going to be a big part of what we talk here on TR in the AM. But your participation is always going to be encouraged. And it'll kind of dictate to what extent we go here on the installments of TR in the AM. Some of the shows we might be on 20, 25 minutes, get in, get out, and catch you next time. Might be that we're 45 minutes to an hour. That's the beautiful thing of this YouTube space. You're not really restricted or confined or, expected to maybe go 2 hours at a time. We can do that. But if you have comments, suggestions, thoughts on different topics that we're going to get into here on the program, we certainly would love to hear from you in the show chat. So go ahead and fire that up first thing on a Wednesday morning. We're going to talk coaching carousel as it relates specifically more so to the Southeastern Conference here this morning. We are also going to talk fired SEC coaches fits. In other words, where could you see a guy like Brian Kelly landing now that he is no longer the head coach at LSU? What about Billy Napier? Billy Napier was an ascending coaching candidate previously at the University of Louisiana before taking the job at Florida. Could be. We see Billy Napier land in another head coaching position somewhere else in college football. Also want to talk about coordinators in the SEC, because with all of these head coach openings, not just in the Southeastern Conference, but this domino effect that all of this is going to have, some really, really good coordinator level guys that I would consider for some jobs, not necessarily just in the Southeastern Conference, but look, Lane Kiffin can't coach all these teams. He can't coach Florida. He can't coach LSU. Can't coach Arkansas. And I understand Drinkwitz, Jeff Brohm, James Franklin, you've got some recognizable names with Power Four head coaching experience that are going to be in the mix for these jobs. These guys are going to get paid one way or the other, whether they move on to, say, Penn State, if it's Drinkwitz, who's also been mentioned with that job to go along with the Florida job, Jeff Brohm, and some of these guys too. You're going to have to move out of their alma maters if you're going to be able to do that. Brohm being one of those guys at the University of Louisville. But we'll get into some coordinator level guys. We'll also get into a What If Wednesday. The What If Wednesday on the debut edition of TR in the AM is going to be, what if there was a 12-team playoff back in 2010? And this is kind of residual from that Alabama-South Carolina game from over the weekend. Improbable in a lot of ways that Alabama was able to come back and pull that game off, especially scoring 15 points in the final 2 minutes and change in Columbia to break the Gamecocks' hearts. But back in 2010, we know South Carolina upset then top-ranked Alabama at Williams-Brice Stadium. And that 2010 Alabama team is one of the biggest what-ifs, to me anyway, of the last 15 years or so, because you talk about so much talent across the board, and for that team to lose three games under Nick Saban seems pretty astounding in retrospect. But let's say, I'm going to save some of this for later. Let's say there was a 12-team playoff back in 2010. What would that have looked like after the conference championship games 15 years ago? And also, we had not gone through that next wave of expansion. So some of these teams we're going to look at from 2010, you're going to say, well, you know, they were a Big 12 team, or they were a P4 team. Well, TCU wasn't a P4 team back in 2010, and they would have been very much involved in that discussion all those years ago. So plenty of that stuff to get into. What was your Tuesday night like in the world of sports? Toronto Blue Jays, give that team a lot of credit. That's a gritty ball club to come back from that just marathon loss on Monday night. Disheartening, you got to think, in a lot of ways, to go ahead last night and very efficiently take care of Shohei Ohtani and the Los Angeles Dodgers there in Chavez Ravine. So one way or the other, we're getting that series back to Toronto. Am I pulling for Toronto in this World Series? I guess I am. I guess I didn't appreciate what the Dodgers did to my Milwaukee Brewers in the NLCS. And there's some leftover, probably Braves hate for the Dodgers from my, nostalgically from my formative years back in the old NL West. So I probably didn't mind the Dodgers losing last night. I wouldn't mind the Dodgers not going back to back as World Series champs. Also, speaking of Milwaukee, our Milwaukee Bucks took down the New York Knicks last night in the Cream City. Big second half for Giannis. Boy, talk about an early MVP guy. That's Giannis right now. And the Milwaukee defense there, after giving up 71 points in the first half, really clamped down in the second. But again, coaching carousel as it relates to Florida, LSU, Arkansas, teams that are in all likelihood going to have to exhibit some patience in terms of who's next in those head coach positions. And that's tough. That's made even tougher when there are other jobs that haven't even opened yet that could impact jobs like those. And that's before also the NFL is even taken into account. Boy, wouldn't you like to have some of those NASCAR headphones that you can listen in at the races to the pits? Wouldn't you like to have that and be tied into the agents in this stuff? Wouldn't you like to have, you know, that ability to hear what's going on with Jimmy Sexton? You could make a lot of money with those agent headphones if you could somehow make those work. But for Florida, it is very much Lane Kiffin watch. We've talked about this on Second Helping with my great friend Brent Beard, who, by the way, we'll have Second Helping live on the channel tonight. It is in lockstep from the Florida perspective of how this thing has gotten behind Lane Kiffin. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, when you look at it, Lane is the most sensible and most attractive guy for Florida. But again, the timing. That Ole Miss win over Oklahoma last Saturday, if you're a Florida fan, you didn't really like to see that, because that makes Ole Miss as good a bet to make, a really good bet to make the college football playoff. I guess the other side of that is if Ole Miss makes the playoff, they could end up playing earlier in mid-December. You know, so if they don't win that game, if they do make the college football playoff, you could get your answer pretty quickly there. I think the longer UF waits to make a hire, after the completion of the regular season, it's going to tell you more about where they think they are with Lane Kiffin or a coach that's in the college football playoff. I think there'll be more smoke around Kiffin and UF, let's say, if we get through the regular season and maybe conference championship Saturday, depending on Ole Miss's status with that. Let's say it gets to be December 12th, December 15th, and Florida still hasn't made a hire. Well, I mean, that would obviously point to the belief anyway that it thinks the Gators think they are very much in the mix for Lane Kiffin once that college football playoff scenario might wrap up. But as it stands right now, the Gators in interim status for the four straight regime. Think about that. You had Will Muschamp replaced by DJ Durkin. You had Jim McElwain replaced by Randy Shannon. And then Dan Mullen replaced by Greg Knox. And now you got Billy Gonzalez stepping in for Billy Napier. Wow. Four straight regimes. Florida fans, they want something more along the lines of Steve Spurrier, obviously. And from his visor to his trash tweeting to his offensive wizardry, no one aligns as well with the head ball coach as Lane Kiffin. And getting back to Randy Shannon a little bit, because Florida has the cocktail party in Jacksonville this week. I believe Shannon coached Florida in the Florida-Georgia game, or Georgia-Florida. Now, I always have asked Pops. Pops he's a lifelong Gator fan, and I've always asked him, well, how does it go? Does it go Florida, Georgia, Georgia, Florida? He says, in his book, it's whoever won the game the previous year. So from that perspective, it's Georgia, Florida right now. Either way, it'll be Billy Gonzalez in that interim role for the Gators. And other than Kiffin looking ahead for Florida, Drinkwitz, again, a name that's been connected to this Florida job. He's also being thrown around on hot boards where Penn State is concerned. James Franklin to Gainesville, I just don't see that being met with a lot of enthusiasm by that Florida fan base, especially when you think about the offensive background for James Franklin. It's very important. You know, some places you've got hires that align with just certain areas of the football team. And for Florida, there is no doubt you better have a really good offensive guy in there because of the standard and the success and the fun that Florida fans had in those 11 seasons or so under Stephen Orr Spurrier. And that hadn't been James Franklin. And also with Franklin, just from a personality perspective, and I'm on the outside, I've never covered James Franklin, but it feels like there are some Dan Mullen vibes there with James Franklin. Smartest guy in the room, it feels like sometimes. And frankly, can he win big when the resources and expectations are in place to do so? In other words, when he's not at Vanderbilt. That's why I think maybe James Franklin more so at an Arkansas or a Kentucky or a Virginia Tech or maybe even a Missouri, you know, if the dominoes really start to tumble. But if it isn't Kiffin for the Florida Gators and the names that have been bandied about to this point, for me, my focus would probably be on Jeff Brohm and seeing if I could wedge him out of his alma mater. Brohm is sort of the antithesis of Lane Kiffin in terms of personality, but offensively, he's his own guy, calls his own plays. I know that didn't sit well with Florida fans with Billy Napier, but this guy has proven at a couple of different places now, not just, you know, a group of five like Napier before him, but at Purdue, now at Louisville, who seems to really get the most out of his teams on a year-to-year basis. How about Arkansas in this whole thing? John Sumrall at Tulane. I think if you're Sumrall and Arkansas ends up being your best option, just stick with Tulane for another cycle. You know, Kentucky, again, this is one of those alma mater situations with John Sumrall. Depending on a potential domino with Mark Stoops at Kentucky, you know, is that an option for Sumrall to go home where he was a player, an assistant coach? We've heard Mizzou offensive coordinator Kirby Moore in connection with this Arkansas job. Dan Mullen, who has taken to social media to refute claims that he would leave UNLV very quickly to take over in Fayetteville. But on what's realistic for Arkansas, or what is realistic for Arkansas, I just can't rule out Bob Petrino. I know he hasn't gotten a win in his interim role yet, but when these dominoes, if they continue to fall like they might, I just think when it's all said and done, it still might be the best move to remove the interim from Bobby Petrino, because we do know, unlike some of the guys that followed him, I guess Bielema, in retrospect, did a pretty damn good job at Arkansas. But some of the other hires certainly did not work out. But Bobby Petrino won at a high level at the University of Arkansas. Previous era, it's different now. I think Arkansas could certainly be a player in the NIL space. But I just wouldn't rule out Bobby where Arkansas is concerned. Then you get to LSU. Again, Kiffin. What about Joe Brady, offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills? Brady, of course, coordinator for that 2019 LSU offense when the Tigers won it all with Joe E.B. and those receivers. Sumrall, you also hear mentioned with LSU, the Tulane coach. James Franklin, again, if you didn't think Brian Kelly was a fit for LSU, I'm not sure how you consider James Franklin to be a fit, because it's more than just football and it's more than just football expectations. It's a cultural thing there. Drink, I could kind of see it. You know, Drink, it doesn't feel forced, and he likes to be out there a little bit, you know, when it comes to his personality. And if you're Florida or LSU, do you do a temp check on a guy like Dabo Swinney? Do you want to go there at this point in Dabo's career? Vice versa, does Dabo feel a need to go there? That could be the Brian Kelly type of move, though. Not necessarily Dabo Swinney, but a sitting head coach at a successful place that sort of moves on to another opportunity where, you know, the expectations and the winning can go hand in hand. A lot of potential variables in play with this carousel. What about SEC fired coaches fits? I was thinking about that with, you know, guys like Billy Napier, Brian Kelly, Sam Pittman. I think Napier would be interesting if Sumrall left Tulane. And maybe if you're Tulane, do you go to Napier? What Tulane has done a nice job of late, though, with Willie Fitz and Sumrall and some of these guys, is they have taken on coaches who are on the ascent. And that's not necessarily the case with Billy Napier, but that's sort of the level I could see it happening for Napier if he's a head coach in 2026. Maybe Memphis, you know, if Ryan Silverfield, the head coach there, moves up a level. Because again, we don't know the extent that these dominoes are going to go. What if a job like Missouri does come open? You know, what about a UAB for Billy Napier? Something like that. What about Brian Kelly to Wisconsin? That's one that came to mind pretty quickly for me once we got the news that Brian Kelly was out at LSU. That one makes a lot of sense, right? Getting him back up into the Midwest where he's been at one of the directional Michigan schools. Kelly's been at Cincinnati, which ironically enough, Luke Fickle was at Cincinnati too, and it's not going very well for him up in Madison. But Kelly has sort of that Wisconsin vibe to him. Brian Kelly feels like he could be a relative of Chris Farley, the late, great Chris Farley. You know, just sort of the animated behavior and the ability to turn purple on a dime. Brian Kelly to Wisconsin. Chris Farley, of course, a Madison native. The things you're going to learn, you know, those are the kind of things you're going to learn right here only on TR in the AM. What about Sam Pittman? I think it's Branson for probably Sam Pittman at this point. Guy's been around a long time, doesn't really need it. Just go hang out in Pigeon Forge West if I'm Sam Pittman. Wanted to talk about these SEC coordinators too. And we are going to get to the comments, by the way. We really, really appreciate it. That's right. That's right. Smoked pork chop. What? Smoked pork chop says TR in the AM? Inject this in my coffee. We can do that. I'm already caffeinated, smoked. Got up early. You know, this is a show 20 years ago I never would have done, because 20 years ago I would not be up at 7 Eastern, 6 Central. But here we are, you know. The older you get, the earlier you seem to rise. Deborah chiming in here says, BK was not a fit for LSU. I don't think most would argue otherwise. She also says Florida was too big for Naep. Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Look, Napier, I'll say this for Drinkwitz at Missouri. Drink knew it was time to give up the offensive play calling. And Kirby Moore, that's the thing about Drink that I'm not entirely sold on if I'm a Florida or I'm a Penn State with him, is if I'm going to talk to him or his people, the thing I want to know is, well, you're going to tell me Kirby Moore is going to come with him as his OC? Because prior to that move, before the 2023 season, it wasn't looking good for Drink at Mizzou. But I do give Drink the credit that you can't give Napier. Napier was one of those, I'll give up the call sheet when you pry my cold, dead hands from it. Drink took accountability, stepped up, made a great hire, and it's been pretty good. I think there are still Missouri fans that, you know, have pain about not being able to get over the hump against top 10 type of opposition, like the Alabama game from a few weeks ago, or Vanderbilt more recently in Nashville. Love it. An alternative to Dusty and Danny. All right, Foodie. We appreciate you chiming in here again on TR in the AM. But back to the coordinators that probably don't get enough love or haven't gotten enough love. I'll give you one right out the gate. Ryan Grubb of Alabama. And coming in as the first-year coordinator for Kalen DeBoer, reuniting with Kalen DeBoer after a year in the National Football League with the Seattle Seahawks. He has been everything this Alabama offense needs him to be. And I think Grubb's arrival, the impact of it has been felt team-wide, because Ryan Grubb, to me, comes off as a big accountability guy. And last year, in year one, under Kalen DeBoer, it didn't feel like there was nearly enough of that throughout that football team in 2024. Not so much this year. And I've also heard Steve Spurrier endorse Ryan Grubb. Maybe not so much as a head coach candidate, but he really likes what Ryan Grubb brings to the table offensively. Now, again, we're not talking about an LSU or a Florida for a guy like Ryan Grubb. Maybe not even a Missouri, but what about a Kentucky? What about an Arkansas? What about Jed Fish? We talk about dominoes. What if the dominoes reach Jed Fish and maybe he ends up in the Southeastern Conference? He's been on a nice ascent as a head coach, doing well at Arizona, doing well now at Washington as the successor to Kalen DeBoer. Jed Fish has ties to the University of Florida. What if Jed Fish ends up down this way in the Southeastern Conference? Ryan Grubb, obviously, previously of the Seahawks and the University of Washington. I think UW could do a lot worse than Ryan Grubb if that becomes a vacancy during the upcoming cycle. Kirby Moore, we talked about. Give Drink credit, again, for making that move. And also, interestingly enough, Kirby Moore worked for Kalen DeBoer at Fresno State, where Moore was on the staff of Jeff Tedford, who had to resign. But then DeBoer kept Kirby Moore on as the pass game coordinator and wide receivers coach. So a nice resume for Kirby Moore, a guy who's only in like his early to mid 30s, but making about 1.2, deservedly so, I'd say, at Mizzou at this point. Did a really nice job with Brady Cook the previous 2 years, was doing good work with Bo Prabula before the unfortunate injury to Prabula last week. It's going to be interesting to see what he can do with a young quarterback now moving forward for the Missouri Tigers. Would Blake Baker, the defensive coordinator for LSU, been on a list like this until a week or two ago? Probably. And I still think Blake Baker's as good a defensive coordinator who's doing it right now. But they got absolutely smoked in the second half by Texas A&M in Baton Rouge last week. I'm not sure if that dims his star all that much. I do think if it comes down to it, whoever succeeds Brian Kelly at LSU, it would be hard if I were that guy to just say, nah, Blake, we're going another direction. I think the guy's that good. I think even at the coordinator level, he's not going to have a hard time finding work. What about Glenn Schumann and Mike Bobo at UGA? Of course, we've seen Bobo as a head coach, most recently out at Colorado State. Didn't work out. Mike had some health issues during his tenure out there. Mike has sort of silenced the haters in that Georgia fan base, hadn't he? The offense hasn't been as much of a problem this year. Now, look, you know, if they struggle against Florida on Saturday in Jacksonville, that could kind of change very, very quickly. Glenn Schumann, I don't get the sense he's on that Dan Lanning track right now. It can be tough, too, at a place like Georgia or a place like even Tennessee where you've got Josh Heupel, an offensive guy, very much involved with that side of the football. Let's say you're Joey Halsey at Tennessee, who's doing a nice job as the offensive coordinator. But it's out there, it's known, kind of like Andy Reid with the Chiefs and Eric Bieniemy a few years back, that, look, the head coach at least is perceived to be the hands-on guy with, say, the offense, or at Georgia with Kirby and the defense. I think Schumann and Bobo feel like they're going to be there for a while with Kirby. And Kirby, likewise, is going to coach with the guys he wants to coach with. I think if it ever got to a situation where someone tried to impose on Kirby from a more official directive that change wanted to be made or needed to be made, I think Kirby'd get out. He's going to coach at this point. He's won his two national championships. He's going to coach as long as he wants with the people he wants to coach with. And Mike Bobo and Glenn Schumann feel like very much two of those guys. You got Ole Miss with Charlie Weiss Jr. and Pete Golding. You know, Charlie Weiss Jr. is sort of in that same boat we just talked about with Heupel and Halsey, because it is Lane. Pete Golding, I could see somewhere like a Louisiana, if that's the route he wanted to go. Maybe Louisiana Tech, you know, sort of that level. Maybe UTSA. You know, he's got background there. Before going to Alabama, he was a UTSA guy. What about Tim Beck of Vanderbilt? I think that would be a Kirby Moore-like hire, except Moore didn't bring along a couple of critical personnel pieces with him from Fresno to Missouri. Beck, as we know, brought Diego, brought Stowers, another guy or two, and, you know, let alone his head coach that he worked with out there in Las Cruces before making that move to Nashville. Tim Beck's done a really good job, though, with that offense and really just changed. You see Clark Lee on some of these hot boards for Penn State and some other jobs. It's kind of like Drink. You know, that was a trajectory-changing sequence for Vanderbilt, no doubt about it, especially with everything else that was going into effect for Vanderbilt with the stadium reno and expansion and all those things. It couldn't have timed out better to bring in that New Mexico State contingent than it did for Clark Lee. What about Auburn defensive coordinator DJ Durkin? Man, he's a good coach. Good high-level coordinator. We talked about him. He's been an interim at Florida in the past. Durkin, you wonder, will he ever be far enough removed from the tragedy that he oversaw, or at least was the head coach at Maryland at the time that you had the tragic death of one of the players there at Maryland. You know, we say that about DJ Durkin, but, you know, Brian Kelly was associated with a significant tragedy at Notre Dame didn't seem to alter his trajectory all that much. What about Colin Klein, offensive coordinator at Texas A&M? He's kind of like Kirby Moore also in that trajectory-wise, very comparable. He's in his fourth year as a coordinator, spent a couple at his alma mater, Kansas State, in that job, and then now doing a really good job with Marcel Reed in that A&M offense. And then we talked about Halsey of Tennessee and that shadow a little bit of Josh Heupel. But you know what? That didn't seem to bother Alex Golish all that much. He was a former Tennessee offensive coordinator. He's going on to South Florida, doing a good job down there. I would have said prior to last week, Golish would be one of those guys that you think about with Arkansas maybe, or a Kentucky if it comes open. And maybe you still do. But that loss to Memphis last week was a tough one for Golish and South Florida. Tim Banks, also at Tennessee, very good defensive coordinator. Fifth season with the Balls in that role. He was a Broyles Award finalist a year ago. He'll be 54 in December. And 10, 15 years ago, you know, you'd have thought of that. Wow. You know, this guy's getting a little bit long in the tooth. But what do you got? You got Cignetti at Indiana now getting an 8-year extension, and he's 64 years old. So things have changed. Got folks chiming in here in the chat. Brian Brunson says, good morning, Trav. Good morning to you, Mr. Brunson. Good to hear from you. We just talked about Golish a little bit, and we've got a comment here from a viewer. Where do you think the USF coach lands? It's a great question. I think I have Golish in more of that domino tier of to be determined. You know, some other things that could play out. Smoke Pork Chop talking about Golish here would be a decent decision, not just with Florida, but any SEC school. Yeah, he did. He did give Bama fits a couple times, and he did beat Florida this season. No doubt about it. I think Golish is a good coach. But we are very much, we can be overtaken by recency bias in today's world, can't we? And so for Golish, after last Saturday, you never know what the perception is. Rick Morrison, an Alabama fan, apparently doesn't like me talking about Ryan Grubb moving on. He says, no, we need Grubb to stay. I wouldn't argue with you there. I think he's done a great job. And you kind of think about Alabama. You know, Alabama's rush offense this year, and this was a thing with Grubb with the Seahawks that apparently they weren't happy with during his year in the NFL. They didn't run the football well enough for the liking. The Seahawks brain trust, and so they decided to move on. Alabama's not running the ball very effectively this year. I think they're 65 yards per game fewer rushing yards than they were a year ago. They ran for like 173 a game in 2024. Alabama right now at 118. Alabama with just 9 rushing touchdowns through 8 games. That's one a game. By my public school upbringing math, a year ago, they were averaging about 3 rushing touchdowns per game. Now, quarterback situation was entirely different last year. Jalen Milroe, they were very, very open to utilizing his legs. That's not the offense that they have this year with Ty Simpson back there. And so some of the things I look at when you have that type of precipitous drop-off in run game, I look at red zone effectiveness, and I look at third down effectiveness. Alabama's about what they were last year in both those numbers. TD conversion rate and red zone, almost identical. Third down conversion, still, they were at a high clip last year. They're at a very high clip this year. So even with the drop-off in the run game, they're still getting it done in a couple of very, very important offensive categories like red zone and like third down. So there you go. There are some thoughts on some coordinators from around the Southeastern Conference. If you've got a few, throw them in the chat. We'll talk about them. I got some thoughts on every SEC game, and they're going to be quick because we're going to be on with Brent Beard, as I said, tonight with Second Helping to go more in depth on this weekend's slate, but I'm going to pull them up here. I think we're going to do the old share screen. We'll see how that goes, right? For the upcoming weekend, as you know, Alabama on the bye, LSU, of course, on the bye. I mean, we've had three coaching moves in the Southeastern Conference this season. All three of those came with teams headed into the bye week. And there we go. We've got the slate on the screen right now. And we'll start with Vanderbilt at Texas in that big noon kickoff. Remember when the Big Ten had dibs on big noon, the big games? Well, kind of flipped, hadn't it? Seems like the SEC more so this year, dominating, really dominating viewership across the board. As we saw from the most recent week. But even Alabama, South Carolina at 3:30. The Bama hate watching is still a thing, apparently. You know, I thought maybe it had moved on with Nick Saban going into retirement. No, there's a lot of folks out there watching to see if Alabama will lose, because Alabama, South Carolina wasn't just the highest rated SEC game television numbers wise. I think in all of college football last Saturday, it was at the top. For the Crimson Tide and the Gamecocks in the middle of the afternoon. You know, not big noon, not prime time, 2:30 Central. Anywho, coming up this Saturday, November the 1st, Vanderbilt, big spot for Diego. Big stage for Diego in terms of his Heisman candidacy. Big for both of these teams in terms of SEC championship game viability. Texas, actually not in a bad spot from that standpoint, because the one SEC loss was to Florida, which is not good. I guess if it came down to tiebreaker somehow, some way, it could be a bad thing. But in terms of head-to-head, Texas has still got a lot of its fate in its own hands, because gets Vanderbilt this week, gets Georgia down the road, gets Texas A&M down the road. So some teams that it needs to navigate to get to Atlanta are still out in front of the Longhorns. Texas, though, even at 3-1 in the league, feels like they're 1-3, because had to survive the last couple of weeks on the road at Kentucky. And then, of course, last Saturday, incredible how that played out. Down 17 in the fourth quarter, still come back to win, and backup quarterback has to come into the game. It's a big part of this game, too. Arch Manning in concussion protocol. What's his availability like? Now, you're going to have the SEC coaches teleconference a little bit later today, so you're going to get a lot of these updates, or an attempt to get these updates. So does Arch Manning go this week, you know, in a big spot, or is it Matthew Caldwell, who threw that 10-yard touchdown pass in Starkville last Saturday night, ended up going for the winning score? Also, does Vanderbilt actually kick the football? Does Vanderbilt actually punt the football to Ryan Niblett? Ryan Niblett, the last three games, you wonder how Texas is 3-1 in the league. Well, Ryan Niblett has a ton to do with that. Had the touchdown return to tie the game against Mississippi State last Saturday. Had the touchdown return against Oklahoma and Dallas that really helped push the Longhorns past the Sooners. Had a couple of big returns against Kentucky to put Texas in a good spot. You know, what ended up being a tight win over the Wildcats in the Commonwealth. But when you think about punt returners in the SEC right now, Niblett, Casey Concepcion of Texas A&M, and Jakari Swain of South Carolina, they have a combined 7 punt returns for touchdowns. Some returning dudes in the SEC this year. Niblett actually leads the nation in punt returns, right around 25 yards per return. So will Vanderbilt do that? It's going to be a fun one right out the gate Saturday. Vanderbilt has been, I think, the more steady, more dependable team of these two. I don't think with Diego Pavia at quarterback, you worry as much about going into Austin. I don't think that team's affected all that much. Now, Vanderbilt's only loss this season was on the road at Alabama. So we'll see how the Commodores handle that. Didn't seem to bother them all that much when they went to Blacksburg early in the season, when Virginia Tech was still excited about this season. Didn't seem to bother Vanderbilt all that much when it went to South Carolina earlier in the season and put a tap on the Gamecocks at Williams-Price. In that 3:30 Eastern window, you're going to have Georgia and Florida, the cocktail party from Duval, Georgia and Florida coming off the bye weeks. 6-1, the Georgia Bulldogs, 4-1 in the league, playing for their SEC championship lives. And also, right now, a spot in the college football playoff. Interesting for Georgia, though. Still got Texas down the road and a game we still aren't talking about enough and the potential for it to be something it hasn't been in a long time, if ever. Georgia, Georgia Tech, you know, to cap that regular season could be one of, for the ages on a couple of different levels. But the Gators, how do they respond to the interim status of Billy Gonzalez? Still plenty of talent. You know, when you match up these rosters right now, Florida's beat up on defense and has been for a while. But when you just go player for player right now, Georgia and Florida, it's close. It's probably closer than it's been for a bit. So Florida is kind of like LSU for me in this interim thing now. Offensively, they might be better after the shakeup and finally getting that call sheet away from Billy Napier. And going interim and how they're going to have that structured with play calling and things of that nature. And still talented enough. I still expect that to be a war Saturday on the banks of the St. John's River. Also, mid to late afternoon on Saturday, you're going to have somebody's going to win an SEC game in Fayetteville Saturday because you got 0-4 in the league, Mississippi State. You got 0 in the last 2+ years type of situation in the SEC for Mississippi State. Keeps knocking on that door. And it's hard, man. Once you get into the rut like Mississippi State had been in, you know, losing just becomes something you figure out new and interesting ways to do. And that's been State, even under Jeff Lebby now for a season and a half. Arkansas with Bobby Petrino, 0-4 in the league. Talen Green last week against Auburn. It was Auburn that got an SEC win in this sort of scenario in Fayetteville last week. Will Mississippi State do the same thing? Talen Green is a lot of fun to watch, the Arkansas quarterback, but there's no in-between. He's either getting a coach fired or he's getting a coach extended. Davon Booth, you know, with Fluff Bothwell at Mississippi State, you don't probably hear enough about Davon Booth, the running back for Mississippi State, but he's been very good. In primetime on Saturday night, the South Carolina Gamecocks coming off that gutting loss to the Alabama Crimson Tide in Columbia last Saturday, now gets to travel to Ole Miss. How will Ole Miss handle the aftermath of that huge win in Norman last Saturday? I think Lane's got to be better in this game. I didn't think Lane was very good in Norman with some of the decisions, some of the personnel decisions. Are we going to continue to get Austin Simmons in red zone when Trinidad Chambliss brings the same skill set to that? I know you feel like you've got two starting quarterbacks, so I can appreciate the sentiment and the want to keep both those guys involved. And I don't mind as much if you have them on the field together, I guess, and some of that we have seen. But, boy, it felt like some really wasted opportunities. And give Oklahoma's defense credit. That's a good defense. But that'll be something I'm interested in. Is Lane in a hold-my-beer mode that could prove detrimental to his team's chances? Because I think he was last week. You know, going for it in a particular situation, it's all hindsight. I understand that. And it also leads me to wonder if Lane does move on from Ole Miss where he can be the he can do the full Lane deal. At Ole Miss, you still going to get that same guy if he goes to, say, Florida? Now, I could see Lane at LSU letting it all hang out, you know, just being the offensive Orgeron, so to speak, down there. Also, in prime time, I like this game. This one has a lot of potential. Oklahoma traveling to Tennessee. Brent Venables, the defensive guy, taking on Josh Heupel, the offensive guy. Joey Aguilar's thrown for a ton of yards, had a huge game at Kentucky last Saturday night as the Tennessee Vols fed rival UK a 50 burger up there. And so Oklahoma with John Mateer Can it muster more on a consistent basis offensively? Matchup here could be Tennessee's defensive front against that Oklahoma offensive line. And how much is put on Mateer to get it done? I love Isaiah Satania, the wide receiver. He's KC Concepcion-ish for A&M, I feel like. I like that he is a tough guy. He has turned it over in some big spots, but I still think that's been a very nice add for the OU offense via the transfer portal. What about Kentucky at Auburn? You've got some head-to-head matchups with some really rough combined league records. This one between Kentucky and Auburn, you're talking about 1-10. We talked about Arkansas and Mississippi State earlier. That's 0-8. So when you have teams like A&M on the bye and Alabama on the bye, the combined records can look a little rough. But Kentucky and Auburn, what is that starting quarterback situation going to look like for the Auburn Tigers? I think I have an idea after the way things played out at Arkansas last week, or at least maybe what it, you know, Ashton Daniels, the Stanford transfer, you heard Hugh talk about it, gave them the needed spark. So it would seem as if Ashton would be the guy over Jackson Arnold to start the game Saturday night at Jordan-Hare Stadium, but we'll see. Cutter Bowley behind center for Kentucky. He's actually improved throughout this season. Kendrick Law has been a sneaky good addition for the Wildcats, who's really struggled to muster explosive plays, but Kendrick Law has given Kentucky some of that since coming over from the Alabama Crimson Tide. Auburn, you got to like in this spot at home, you would think, especially if the momentum behind center continues to play out. Jeremiah Cobb's one of those guys within the Southeastern Conference this year, too, that hasn't been talked about enough because you had the Austin situation leaving the team, however that played out. But Cobb has he has emerged and been very, very good for the Auburn Tigers. As we wrap things up here, let's see, any more comments that we want to get to? Rick says he will be a Vandy fan this weekend. Hope they crush Texas. There you go. What else here? Jim says, I think Vanderbilt knows it can only lose one more out of the remaining four, including trips to Texas and Tennessee. It's a good point from a scheduling perspective. You've got these elimination type games that just, it feels like the playoff already, right? I mean, it's essentially playoff football and it's October 29th. Now, you know, we talked about the expansion of the playoff and how that would impact the integrity of the regular season, but well, it feels like we're, if anything, getting more critical games, maybe even, well, not earlier in the season because before with the two-team deal and the BCS or four or whatever, I mean, if you had two losses going into October, you were pretty much done. But there is still that element of importance, even with an expanded playoff. Smoke Pork Chop chiming back in here says, love the Ryer and Shine broadcast. Even this caught the watch the tight end guy off guard. Yeah, we thought about Ryer and Shine. That's interesting you mentioned that. We thought about Ryer and Shine for a title, but we went with TR and the AM, you know. I like it, though, Smoked. I like where your head's at this early on a Wednesday morning. Okay, as promised, what if Wednesday, and we're going to go back to 2010, we're going to take down the SEC slate here, and we're going to pull up some, let's see, that's not right. We're going to pull up some interesting numbers from 2010. This is how teams stacked up in 2010 after conference championship Saturday. How about that? We're going to work through that right here. And we've got it pulled up. Yeah. So there you see it. After conference championship Saturday in 2010, what would a 12-team playoff have looked like? You had Auburn at 13-0. Of course, that's Cam Newton and the Auburn Tigers. Fresh off an SEC championship game win over the South Carolina Gamecocks. Steve Spurrier's South Carolina Gamecocks got to Atlanta in 2010. Behind Auburn, you had the Oregon Ducks. That would prove to be your national championship matchup for 2010. TCU was in there at 12-0. Now, TCU, as we talked about earlier, this was pre the latest waves of expansion, whether it was the Big 12, the Southeastern Conference, ACC. So TCU was 12-0 as the Mountain West champ. Then you had Brett Bielema. What about Wisconsin? Thinking about that now with where Wisconsin football is right now. Bielema had that thing at 11-1 in the Big Ten. And I think this is before the Big Ten even implemented a championship game. Stanford, like that with the Big Ten, the Pac-12. This has got to be Andrew Luck time, right? At 11-1. Ohio State was 11-1. Michigan State was 11-1 in 2010. Arkansas, you talk about Bobby Petrino, and you talk about moving on and going outside the box. Well, look at it right here. Arkansas is 10-2 in 2010. As I recall, Alabama went into Fayetteville and got a win over the late Ryan Mallett. Big Tex, that was a tough one. I was there for that one in Reynolds Razorback Stadium on a crazy Saturday afternoon in 2010. Oklahoma, 11-2 there, sitting at number 9 in the AP poll. Boise State, now this is, again, something we're going to take into account here, because you've got Boise State at 11-1, Nevada at 12-1. They were both WAC schools back then. And that's Colin Kaepernick, I think, era Nevada, with Chris Ault running that pistol formation out in Reno at 12-1. So the point is, you've got three teams here in TCU, Boise, and Nevada that were, by today's standards, group of four. Or group of five teams. So how do you sort of work that? You got Missouri here at 10-2, but this is pre-SEC Missouri. This is Big 12 Missouri. And then you got Alabama at 9-3. So when you think about Alabama at 9-3 with Virginia Tech from the ACC at 11-2, and you get into things like strength of schedule, after conference championship weekend in 2015, Alabama's strength of schedule at number 15 in the AP poll was 11th. Missouri at 10-2, strength of schedule was 52. Virginia Tech at 11-2 was 44. LSU at 11th in the AP poll at 10-2 was 17th. And LSU is a non-starter for Alabama's chances back in 2010 because LSU had the head-to-head. After losing at South Carolina, if you're an Alabama fan, you probably don't want to recall, went to LSU and lost on a Saturday afternoon in early November to the Tigers. So LSU's in over Alabama. But again, Boise. You know, Boise at one point, I think in 2010, had climbed as high as third in the AP poll. But looking at them after the championship weekend, they're 11-1 and they got a strength of schedule of 87. So I got to think between TCU, Boise, and Nevada, you're only getting one of those in. So if Alabama's 15th, that's going to push them up a couple to 13, right there on the cusp of that 12. And Alabama had the head-to-head on Arkansas, even though Arkansas was a 10-win team and Alabama was a 9. So, you know, even back in 2010, we'd have had some very lively discussions. I'll say this about Alabama 2010. I don't think anybody wanted to play that team in the postseason. You know, I know, I understand. You lose at South Carolina, you lose at LSU, you give up, what, a 4-score lead to Auburn on your home field. That would have been problematic for Alabama, too, the timing of some of those losses. Losses in November to LSU and Auburn probably would have made it a much more difficult sort of case for Alabama. But knowing what we know now after what we saw from Alabama in that Citrus Bowl win over Kirk Cousins in Michigan State, that roster, underwhelming teams in the Nick Saban era aren't things that you really talk about much. I mean, yeah, there were teams that it came up short of national championships or even Southeastern Conference championships. But when you think about, you know, what that team had on that roster and what it ultimately went on to do the next 2 years, really springboard situation for Alabama to win it all in back-to-back seasons in 11 and 12. If Alabama got into a 12-team playoff in 2010, that would not have been the team you wanted to see. If they get in as the 12 and it's on campus, and let's say you're Stanford as a 5, I guess that's the way it would have played out, right? The first four with the byes. You know, if you're a Stanford or a Michigan State, you don't want to see Alabama in your building. You don't. John Harbaugh, Stanford at 11-1, fifth in the AP poll here, and a pretty good strength of schedule that season. Ohio State, yeah, 11-1, 62 strength of schedule. Michigan State, 59 strength of schedule. Not very impressive. I would actually have argued Arkansas over some of those Big Ten teams. And I'm not sure exactly how the bowl games played out. So the Big Ten people, if some of these SEC teams like Arkansas that I'm talking about, and Arkansas did lose it, ultimately lost its bowl game in 2010. So, you know, I'm sure I'll hear it from the bowl matchup perspective. But Alabama in 2010, if they get into just the 12 team, not a fun team to play. If you're Auburn, you don't want to see Alabama again in 2010. Maybe you feel like you cracked the code with Cam in that comeback in Tuscaloosa. And you're thinking, well, if you get Alabama, it's going to be neutral site, so you won't have to go on the road. That's a good point there. But that seemed to be an engaged Alabama team a game or two too late. It is what it is. You know, you're not used to seeing that, as I said. All right, Rick really likes Ryer and Shine. All right, I hear you, but we're going with TR in the AM. Rick says he's now headed to the tree stand. Oh, he's going to go get him, and he'll catch us tonight on Second Helping. He likes the show. Thanks, Rick. We appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun on a Wednesday morning. I hope you've enjoyed it. I've got some other stuff I'll be doing through the course of the day. I'm going to be on, if you're in the Huntsville, Alabama area, I'll be on with Scott and Drew at 8 Central. So in about an hour from now, I'll be doing some Huntsville radio right there in the Tennessee Valley. So be on the lookout for that. And again, if you haven't subscribed to Ryer on YouTube, hope you'll go ahead and hit that. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button right now. Hit subscribe. Hit the like for us. We need the likes. Hit the likes and turn on those notifications. That way you get all of our content as it drops right here on Ryer on YouTube. Thanks again, everybody. Have a great rest of your Wednesday, and we'll talk to you again real soon right here on Ryer on YouTube.